Naam ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 9, Text 6. Sachintayan dvakshanam ekadambasi. Sachintayan dvakshanam ekadambasi. Upashrino dvir gaditam vacho vibhu. Upashrino dvir gaditam vacho vibhu. Sparsheshu yat sodasham ekavimsam. Sparsheshu yat sodasham ekavimsam. Niskinchananam nirpayadanam vibhu. Niskinchananam nirpayadanam vidhu. Sachintayan drakshadam ekadambasi. Upashrino dvir gaditam vacho vibhu. Sparsheshu yat sodasam ekavimsam. Niskinchananam nirpayadanam vibhu. Sachintayan dvakshadam ekadambasi. Upashrino dvir gaditam. Sharam ekadambasi. Upashrino dvir gaditam vacho vibhu. Eshu yat sodasam ekavimsam. Chananam nirpayadanam vibhu. Intanam akshanam ekadambasi. Upashrino dvir gaditam vacho bibhu. Pasheshu yat sodasam ekavimsam. Kinchananam nirpayadanam bibhu. Vaishnavis? Anybody? Sa he chintayan, while thus thinking, dwi two, aksharam syllables, ekada once upon a time, ambasi in the water, upashrinot heard it nearby, dwi twice, garitam uttered. Vachaha, words. Vibhu, the great. Sparsheshu, in the Sparsha letters. Yat, which. Sodasam, the 16th. Ekavim sam, and the 21st. This kinchananam, of the renounced order of life. Nirpa, O king. Yat, what is? Dhanam, wealth. Vidu, as it is known. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Srila Prabhupada. While thus engaged in thinking in the water, Brahmaji heard twice from nearby two syllables joined together. One of the syllables was taken from the 16th and the other from the 21st of the Sparsha alphabets, and both joined to become the wealth of the renounced order of life. Purport. In Sanskrit language, the consonant alphabets are divided into two divisions, namely the Sparsha Varnas and the Talavya Varnas. From Ka to Ma, the letters are known as the Sparsha Varnas, and the 16th of the group is called Ta, whereas the 21st letter is called Pa. Okay, so they're both from the first division. So when they are joined together, the word Tapa, or penance, is constructed. This penance is the beauty and wealth of the Brahmanas and the renounced order of life. According to Bhagavad philosophy, every human being is meant simply for this tapa and for no other business, because by penance only one can realize his self. And self-realization, not sense gratification, is the business of human life. This tapa or penance was begun from the very beginning of the creation. And it was first adopted by the Supreme Spiritual Master, Lord Brahma. By tapasya only can one get the profit of human life, and not by a polished civilization of animal life. The animal does not know anything except sense gratification in the jurisdiction of eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. But the human being is made to undergo tapasya for going back to Godhead, back home. When Lord Brahma was perplexed about how to construct the material manifestations in the universe and went down within the water to find out the means and the source of his lotus seed, he heard the word tapa vibrated twice. Taking the path of tapa is the second birth of the desiring disciple. The word upashrinut is very significant. It is similar to upanayana, or bringing the disciple nearer to the spiritual master for the path of tapa. So Brahmaji was thus initiated by Lord Krishna, and this fact is corroborated by Brahmaji himself in his book, the Brahma Samhita. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma has sung in every verse, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Thus, Brahma was initiated by the Krishna mantra, by Lord Krishna himself. And thus he became a Vaishnava, or a devotee of the Lord. Brahma was initiated by the Krishna mantra, by the Lord himself. And thus he became a Vaishnava, or a devotee of the Lord, before he was able to construct the huge universe. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita that Lord Brahma was initiated into the 18-letter Krishna mantra, which is generally accepted by all the devotees of Lord Krishna. We follow the same principle because we belong to the Brahma Sampradaya, directly in the disciplic chain from Brahma to Narada, from Narada to Vyas, from Vyas to Madhva Muni, from Madhva Muni to Madhavendrapuri, from Madhavendrapuri to Ishvarapuri, from Ishvarapuri to Lord Chaitanya, and gradually to His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, our Divine Master. One who is thus initiated in the disciplic succession is able to achieve the same result or power of creation. Chanting of this holy mantra is the only shelter of the desireless pure devotee of the Lord. Simply by such tapasya or penance, the devotee of the Lord achieves all perfections like Lord Brahma. Om igena timananda shajananjana shalakaya chakshura militamiena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swaparantikam. Okay. So, we're hearing about Lord Brahma here, and we're hearing in our today's translation how, while thus engaged in thinking, what was he thinking? He says he was engaged in thinking. Well, we learned that from the previous translation. He was thinking, says here, while thinking of creating the material world. So he was thinking of creating the material world. Okay, that's what he was thinking about. Do we have any more information about, it's a pretty broad subject, thinking about creating the material world. Well, what aspect of thinking about creating the material world was he exactly absorbed in? Well, we learn that from the next part of the sentence. It says, he could not understand the proper direction for such creative work, nor could he find out the process for such creation. So in other words, somehow or another, at this stage, Lord Brahma could understand that, hey, I'm supposed to create a universe. He could understand that because he's thinking about how to create the material world. But simultaneously, he's also thinking, but I don't know what to do or how to do it. I got a bit of a problem here, right? That's how I understand that. He's thinking about creating the material world, but he could not understand the proper direction for such creative work. What am I supposed to do? Nor could he find out the process of such creation. And if I figure out how am I supposed to do it? So that's what he was thinking. Is that all he was thinking? Well, he was thinking a bit more than that as well. As we learned from the previous, earlier part of the sentence, it says, Lord Brahma, the first spiritual master, supreme in the universe, he could not trace out the source of his lotus seat. So that was also on his mind. See, so he's up there on the lotus seat, at least in this point, right? Comes down into the water for today's verse. But he's thinking about, well, wait, where does, I'm sitting on this lotus seat, where's it coming from? He's kind of, you know, bewildered about that. But at the same time, you know, people are capable of thinking about more than one thing at once. At the same time, he's thinking about, okay, well, meantime, I'm supposed to create this universe. What do I do? How do I do it? So he's totally kind of perplexed in one sense, you know, bewildered. Then some time passes. This is why I understand it. Some time passes and he hears the sound. He hears this sound vibrated. Ta-pa, like that. And he hears it twice. And so he was fortunate. You know, Lord Brahma, not any old jiva gets to be Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is one of the most qualified jivas in the universe. Actually, if there's no qualified jiva, if there's no jiva that's sufficiently qualified to take the post of Lord Brahma, we learn from the Bhagavatam that Krishna will do it himself. So you can't just be any old Joe Schmo, so to speak, and become a Lord Brahma. You got to be pretty together. So Lord Brahma heard this syllable, ta, pa, like that. And, you know, due to his good fortune and his elevation, he could understand what that meant. And even more important than that, he could understand who was coming from. And I've got to, just for the purpose of making this point, I need to just go a little bit ahead till tomorrow's purport. I'll just borrow one sentence here, one phrase. It says here, in relation to this point, he, meaning Lord Brahma, could rightly understand that the sound was transmitted by the Lord himself. See? So that was his conviction. You know, he could understand what the sound meant, that he was supposed to perform penance, and he could understand that it was coming from the Lord himself. So, kind of a no-brainer, he decided, that's what I got to do. So he started performing the penance, tapasya. Exactly what he did, be honest with you, I'm not sure. I don't know exactly what Lord Brahma's tapasya was. I mean, he says it was later in the purport today. It says he was initiated into the 18-syllable Krishna mantra. So did he start chanting that mantra? I don't know. I'm not 100% clear. But he started performing tapasya, and he performed his tapasya for 1,000 celestial years, and that's mentioned in one of the upcoming purports. And Prabhupada tells in that purport he gives the calculations for what a celestial year is. It's 6 × 30 × 12 × 1,000 of our years. That's one celestial year. And Lord Brahma performed his tapasya for 1,000 celestial years. So I did the math, and it worked out. Works out about 2 billion, a little bit more than 2,160,000,000 years, which is a long time, but actually for Brahma, it's just a morning's work, because, you know, Lord Brahma's day is 8,600,000,000 years long, so that's his full day, that's his, you know, his 24-hour day, so his daytime, because he has a 12-hour day, right, 12-hour night, so 4.3 billion is his daylight day, so to speak, and so half a day. You know, knows if he started when he got up in the morning, if he heard ta-pa, and he started doing his tapasya, by lunchtime he was all done. But I don't know if that's exactly how it happened. But anyway, so he did it for half a day of his time, and he was successful. He was successful. And so we have to follow in his footsteps, you know. And Prabhupada makes the point that there is an analogy here. It's the idea is not coming from me. It actually comes from Prabhupada. And I'll read you that. If I could find it. There we go. You might say, well, what does what Lord Brahma did have to do with what we have to do? Well, according to Prabhupada, a lot. He says here in text 9, in the second paragraph, he says, executing bhakti yoga is exactly like sitting on the lotus sprouted of the abdomen of the transcendental personality of Godhead. For Lord Brahma was seated there. So Prabhupada makes it an analogy. Prabhupada gives an analogy here. That's executing devotional service is like the situation Lord Brahma was in. The tapasya he performed sitting on the lotus flower, that was his bhakti yoga, basically. So where our bhakti yoga, of course, is same, it is just different activity, but the same idea. And so what is it for us? You know, what is the equivalent? What's the equivalent of us sitting on a lotus flower and performing tapasya for 1,000 celestial years? Well, Prabhupada clearly states that in the purport to number 8, he says, previous verse, he says, following the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the only duty of the disciple. And this completely faithful execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the secret of success. So in other words, that's our bhakti yoga. That's bhakti, just like the tapasya was the bhakti yoga for Lord Brahma. And for us, bhakti yoga is following the order of the bona fide spiritual master. That is the only duty of the disciple. Like that. So that's how we follow in the footsteps of Lord Brahma. And it's a good idea to follow in the footsteps of Lord Brahma because it's actually the solution to the whole problem. Look at what happened. Lord Brahma, there he was just one verse ago. He's sitting on this lotus flower. He doesn't know how he got, you know, what the origin is. He doesn't know. He knows he's supposed to create a universe, but he doesn't have a clue how to do it. What exactly he's supposed to do or how to do it. And then rather than go roll up his sleeves and start, like, take out his notebook and start making architectural drawings or whatever you do to create a universe, you know, rather than do that or to try to, like, sit there and really figure out where the heck is this lotus coming from, no. He was submissive. He heard the sound, ta-pa, and he could understand this coming from the Lord. So he just... okay, I'm going to do the tapasya. And then everything else. You know, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and then all things will be added unto you. So that's what he did. You know, he didn't put he put the horse before the cart, not the other way around. He got it right. He got it right. He got the instruction, performed tapasya. He performed the tapasya, and then everything was revealed to him. You know, it was revealed to him what the origin of the lotus was. It was revealed to him what he had to do to create the universe and exactly how to do it. Perfecto, you see? And it's the same thing for us. It's the same thing for us, you know? That's why, you know, there's so many different verses in the Bhagavatam that talk about how, you know, don't worry about your material situation. Don't try to, you know, don't put a lot of effort into trying to increase your happiness or decrease your distress. Just focus on your devotional service. And everything will fall in place. You know, Krishna takes care of the rest. How's it go? Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana pariupashate tesham nitya bhuyuktanam yoga shemam vahamiham. To those who are like concentrating on my personal form, you know, on my devotional service, to them I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. In other words, Krishna's in the picture and he takes care of all that stuff. He takes care of the material arrangements for somebody who's really focused and really, you know, really trying to seriously execute the devotional service. So that's, you know, what Lord Brahma experienced, and that's what we will experience if we follow in his footsteps. And actually, it's the solution to all the problems in the world, if you stop and think about it. Because as Prabhupada points out here in the purport, of today's purport, what does he say? Oh, here we go. By tapasya only, one can get the profit of human life, and not by a polished civilization of animal life. See, so that's exactly what's going on today. People are going for the polished civilization of animal life. They're in ignorance. They don't understand. Well, their ignorance is this: they're thinking this body is everything, and when this body's finished, that's the end of everything, for the most part. You know, so. If you're thinking like that, if that's your kind of like your basic understanding of life, then it makes perfect sense to just try to do whatever you got to do to get the best sense gratification. And in the process of doing that, what's happened is you come in conflict with other people who are trying to do the exact same thing. You know, there's limited resources on every different level, gross and subtle. See, so you come into conflict with other people who are trying to do that, you know, get the best sense gratification. So you have competition, conflict, and at any moment things could degrade into like a chaotic hell, right? Which we've kind of you see happen. It pops up here and there. Where on the contrary, if somebody say somebody like ourselves, devotees, understand that we're essentially spiritual beings in a material body. Okay, the body's like a vehicle. All right, so we're essentially spiritual beings in a material body. My real happiness lies in my progressive realization of that fact. So let me do what I got to do, you know, to try to make advancement in that realization and cooperate with other people who are trying to do the same thing. And then life is just so, you know, the problems are just vanished practically into oblivion. It's just like, remember I said how the body's our vehicle, Okay? So say you're driving in a vehicle, and you're driving down the highway, and you take your hands off the steering wheel, and it kind of starts, and your wheel alignment isn't great, so it starts veering to the right or veering to the left. Okay? Let's take veering to the right. Does that mean you have to just, the car is telling me, the car wants to veer to the right, so we've got to go. No, you drive the car. The car doesn't drive you. You see? You drive the vehicle. The vehicle doesn't drive you. That's how people are living today. The vehicle is driving them because they have no knowledge. They have no knowledge that we actually are essentially spiritual beings in a material body. The body's calling the shots. That's not what's supposed to happen. The person's supposed to call the shots, and the body follows what the person does. You drive the car. The car doesn't drive you. You see? So in other words, when a person's feeling, and this is, as I said, this is a solution to all practically most social problems in the world today, that if you're understanding you're a spiritual being, when your body's telling you, or when your mind is saying, oh, you know what? That person insulted me. Let me lose my temper and abuse them. You don't have to do that. Or when the mind is saying, hey, you know, that person is a little slow. Let me take unfair advantage of that person in this business deal or something like that. You know, lust, greed, anger. Or let me exploit that person's body for my sense gratification. You see, the mind will dictate these things because that's the business of the mind, right? Especially in Kali Yuga. You know, back to that analogy of the car. If you have a car, it's like a new car and everything's working properly. If you take your hands off the steering wheel, it pretty much goes straight. You see, but still you have to steer because it bends in the road and things like that. But in Kali Yuga, it's like driving a car for most of us. It's like having a car where the wheel alignment's off. It's off. You know, you're influenced by the lower modes of material nature, passion and ignorance. So as soon as you take your hands off the steering wheel, so to speak, as soon as you decide, you relax your intelligence and you follow what the dictates of your mind and your senses, you're in big trouble. We're in big trouble, you know. So you can't do that. And when you have this knowledge, you have a compelling reason not to do it. Krishna consciousness is, it's very practical. It gives you a philosophy which enables you to really be a human being, act like a human being, to have a good reason to control your mind and senses. And if people would just do that, I mean, I don't know what percent, but some high percent of all the problems in the world would be solved. I mean, it could become a really nice place if people took to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and applied it in their life. And a very nice example of that is being given to us by our guest here this morning, Sri Krishna Purushottam, who lives up in the Bay Area. And I don't know, a couple years ago, he rented some land from a farmer, and he imported some cows from India. What kind of cows? Gir cows, for real official Indian cows. And brought them over here, and as we speak, three of them are giving calves at UC Davis. So, it's not like it's just pie in the sky. It can be done. You hear devotees talk so much about Vanashram and like that. Well, apparently it's not as difficult as we make it sound. I mean, here's somebody who he decided, let's do it. And they got the cows and they're having calves and they take care of them. And, you live happily ever after, at least for the rest of this body. So it's not like it's, pie in the sky. It's possible. So anyway, this is a very important verse, very important idea. We should all do exactly what Lord Brahma did. He heard the syllables. He understood instruction was coming from Krishna, from the Lord, and he followed it, and it worked out for him. And the same thing will happen for us if we do exactly what he did. So I'll stop here. Does anybody have any? Yeah.
Thanks for a nice class, Bhagapati Prabhu. I just have one quick question. You had mentioned many times the word tapa, which means penance or austerity. And And all I understood, or I heard, and maybe I didn't hear enough, is that Lord Brahma was sitting on the lotus, and that was his tapa. Okay? Well, tapa means voluntary suffering. There was no suffering in simply sitting. I'm not suffering, and I've sat for 40 minutes. What was his suffering?
What was his suffering?
Yeah, what was the voluntary? You know, that he's doing it on
right,
his own.
Right.
How was he suffering?
Well,
maybe you can help me understand.
You might not have caught it, but I said in the class, I'm not sure exactly what his tapasya was. I don't know, and I suggest that maybe he was chanting the 18-syllable mantra that he got initiated into, but I'm not exactly positive.
But is that a form of suffering? When I chant, I don't feel I'm suffering. Suffering means, for example, a person stands on his leg for 3 hours, and it feels like his leg is coming off. That's suffering.
Yeah.
Things which actually hurt you. That's what it is. People, they sit for many hours, and their body is getting, what you call, it's falling
your
asleep.
Your leg is falling asleep,
And it's hurting. So that's suffering. So all I'm asking is if you know, and if you don't know, it's okay.
I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
I don't want any guesses. I want facts. And if we don't know the facts, that's okay. But if we speculate, if you're speculating, then just say, this is my speculation, and it may be a good one for all I know.
I won't even speculate. Does anybody know the answer to that question? What was the tapasya? Tapasya, the definition of tapasya is voluntarily accepting inconvenience to the mind and body for the purpose of self-realization. So what was the actual tapasya that Lord Brahma was performing for that half a day that he was performing his tapasya?
I think Maharaj's premise is incorrect. Tapasya doesn't have to be painful. Like Prabhupada said, our tapasya is falling the four rags and chanting Hare Krishna. He said, actually, this is joyful. It's your lack of consciousness that makes you think it's not joyful. In the beginning, it's painful to get up early in the morning, chant Hare Krishna, follow the regulative principles. But if you do it long enough, then the so-called pain goes away. And you're actually happy to follow the four rags and happy to chant Hare Krishna. So I think the premise is incorrect. That it has to be painful, especially somebody on that level of existence like Lord Brahma. But if you want to look at it like there was some inconvenience, like you said, it was half of his morning, half of his day. For any of us to sit down for half a day and just chant, if you're not in the highest consciousness, it is painful. If Savas ordered everybody right now, no breakfast, don't go outside, no staring around, just sit on this floor and chant for half of the day. Most of us would be feeling inconvenient. It would be, oh no, I want to go outside and see the sun. Oh, I want to eat my breakfast. It would be inconvenient. So if you want to look at it that way, there was some kind of inconvenience. To sit down for half a day and chant the Krishna mantra, if that was his penance, which it seems to be, that he got the mantra, he heard tapa, he stayed there for half a day and didn't do anything but chant. So from our perspective, that's inconvenient, to just sit down for half a day and chant. The example was we have in our line, Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. When he joined, all he liked to do was just chant. So Bhaktisiddhanta allowed him to do that, just chant Hare Krishna. And the senior devotees got upset. We have to go out and preach and collect money and do this. Why this new person is allowed to just stay back in the temple and chant? So one day Bhaktisiddhanta said, okay, nobody goes out today. Stay in the temple and chant all day. After a few days, they wanted to go out. Maharaj, please let us go out and chant and collect money or whatever. You see, so it's not easy to just chant.
Right. Sachi?
Suffering is a relative thing. For example, Haridas Thakur, he was chanting all day, and it was ecstatic to him. If I try to chant, as you were just mentioning, a half a day, I don't think I'd last even a quarter of a day because it would be too painful for me. So it is a relative thing, but if it pushes you to the point of difficulty, trial, tribulation, pain, suffering, and that's tapasya.
Okay. Sachi? One man's tapasya is another man's ananda, right? Is that expression go? Yeah, something like that.
So, yeah, Prabhu. Yeah. I had the same answer that
Archita
was saying. I heard it many times that whenever it comes to tapa, another meaning, another way to describe it was difficult to perform. A difficult thing to perform. But now I have a question for you. Suppose I said, Bhrigupati, wake up. You already have a precedence of what wake up means. So how is it that Lord Brahma understood tapa? He didn't even know who he was. And many other things he didn't know. How do you explain that?
Well, the best answer I could give is Savashachaham Riti Sanivishto Matak Smirtu Gyanam Apoanam Cha. Krishna's in the heart and he gives knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So Lord Brahma heard that and he just felt very confident that, okay, this is what that means and it's coming from the Lord. So that's the best I could do. Anybody want to say something in addition? No. Archer just shaking his head no, so I guess that's good enough, right? Good enough. Okay. Sri Krishna Purushottam.
Thank you, Prabhu. I think tapasya also maybe can think like going on book distribution is like, of course, it's a voluntary thing for us. One time you mentioned that when you go out, there are a lot of impediments, right? When we knock a door, especially when we distribute Bhagavatams, they invite us to their home and they tell we have to sit for 45 minutes and talk to them, know their problems, and then give them a set, you know. So that is tapasya, hearing that austerity, right? You know, it's a, and then you told one time to read us, six Goswamis Ashtakam, that, you know, the impediments will go away. So tapasya means, of course, initially it is difficult, but afterwards it will become easy, you know, so that maybe it's my concoction.
Okay. Anybody else have anything they'd like to? All right, we stopped on time. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Sitting there for those thousands of years. Yeah. Who sits in one place for thousands of years? That's a tapasya.
Yeah.
It's suffering. It's not an ordinary way. Right. You're sitting there for like, you know, a half hour. Nothing.
Right.
Okay, so that's no tapasya. But if you have to sit all day in that same place and not even move, that's tapasya.
Actually, I had one thought right at the end of the class. Doing anything other than what you
normally
you
do.
Want to do yourself, that's tapasya. In other words,
And if it's pleasant, it's not the tapasya. But if it's pleasurable, we don't call it, because there's no suffering. Prabhupada always used voluntary suffering as opposed to non-voluntary suffering, which comes just as a result of something that you are happen to be doing. Like, for example, you have constipation. That's tapasya. Yeah, because you're suffering. And when finally everything comes out, no more tapasya. So if it's pleasurable, we can't call it tapasya because it's contradictory to the definition of tapasya, which is there must be some suffering, something that is painful, something that is difficult, something that is...
Okay, but you ever heard the expression? This is a Vishnujan expression. Vishnujan, formerly Maharaj, he said, devotees have to learn how to appreciate the bliss of tapasya. The bliss of tapasya.
Yeah, but ultimately it is blissful. Because Krishna, seeing that you're willing to bear and willing to tolerate and willing to keep up something that doesn't feel good, it's not normal, that deserves some... Wait, let me finish.
Yeah, right.
That deserves some sweetness, some blissfulness, some gift. It deserves a gift. And the gift, of course, is, as you were just saying, the bliss. That's the bliss of tapasya. The result of which ultimately comes. Initially, it's not so blissful, but ultimately, it is blissful. All of your bliss and my bliss and your bliss comes from what? What we've been doing as a result of our trying to develop love for Krishna. And he's appreciating, and he's giving it drops, drops, and drops, and drops, and that's our bliss.
I want to talk to you more about that, but I'll...